Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Once more, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, business, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on home remedies when we come back. Yeah, let me ask you this. What do you think's wrong with the Ten Commandments? Because it's pretty obvious that something is wrong with the Ten Commandments, because they've been banned from our public schools, our public institutions, and our national consciousness. Now, instead of these ten simple, time-tested laws, we see the ten planks to the Communist Manifesto. And they're teaching these ten planks to the Communist Manifesto in our public schools, our public institutions. We've made them a part of our national psyche. Now, that's why I contend that this is a pretty radical change in our political and moral outlook over the past 50 years. Are you aware, for instance, that your daughter couldn't receive an aspirin in your public school without your consent, but your daughter can have an abortion arranged through that same public school nurse without even your knowledge, much less your consent? That's why I contend that the solution to this kind of moral perversion and national insanity is to go back to what worked. Let's go back to the Ten Commandments and the Mosaic Law. You know, our founding fathers practiced and advocated the Ten Commandments, and they even put 22 principles of that law into our federal constitution. And there's still at least one school left in America that's teaching this entire Mosaic Law, the Ten Commandments, and all 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, as well as the penalties, and the 33 benefits that we receive for their observance. Now, you know, every law has a penalty. And you don't have to know what the penalty to the law is in order to suffer from its effects. So whether we call this the Mosaic Law, the law of God, the common law, natural law, or karma, or something else, it's automatic. It works just like AIDS, herpes, and VD, which just happen to be the natural penalties for adultery. Now, if you'd like more information, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package first. That's the place to start. It doesn't cost you anything. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general, and it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining, and best of all, it's free, and you can call and order one right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go straight to our website, georgegordon.org. Click onto the archives page and download it right there. That's georgegordon.org. Archives page, download. Now, on this last program here, there was a section in here on the first 9 months. I thought, when you're talking about reproduction and the development of a fetus in a woman's uterus, in her womb, there's quite a little process that goes on there. And he's written a special supplement in here called The First 9 Months. I thought I'd share a little of that with you. One of the things that I've noticed here about God is that he's pro-life. You know, we have in this country, we have a controversy between pro-choice and pro-life. The Creator, you know, he wrote up a number of statutes. And in those statutes, you can see very plainly that he is plainly pro-life. He's the originator of life. He's the creator of life. And he gave us some laws to go along the way. One of them deals with adultery. The other deals with fornication. In order to prevent having babies coming on at the wrong time, we have a thing called birth control. And there's a natural birth control process, you know, besides the pill, you know, and so on. Now, nothing's foolproof. You know, accidents happen. No, I had five children. We were pretty careful, and we spaced them out, you know, every 2, 3, 4 years. So that, you know, you, as a mother, you don't want to have five little kids, you know, about 10 months apart now, do you? So now we thought about that, you know, my wife and I, and we thought, well, wouldn't it be better if you had them every 2, 3, 4, 5 years? So that you didn't have them all bunched up and it's a big bother, you know, a big chunk of work right now. And you kind of space it out over time. Now, there's a natural process for doing that. And one of the laws that governs this, you know, to prevent premarital pregnancy is called adultery. One of the Ten Commandments. And then there's a second little factor that comes into play here, which is called fornication. That's having premarital sex before you're married. So here on planet Earth, there's no such thing as sexual relations outside of marriage. Now, I'm not deaf, dumb, and blind. I know it's going on all the time, but there are laws that govern that, and there's no such thing as a broken law without a penalty. And so we're paying penalties in the form of sexually transmitted diseases, premarital pregnancy, divorce, child support, and alimony. Now, if you want to avoid those side effects or those penalties, you know, and if you'll get in harmony with thou shalt not commit adultery, I mean, you know, you can have all the fun that sex offers, and then you can space out those babies, those children, so that they're not all bunched up and causing a big bunch of bother. This is what women are complaining about. So, you know, we would like to have some control over our reproductive process. And, you know, I think that makes all the sense in the world. I don't think that having all these babies too soon makes a lot of sense. And maybe you've had enough and you don't want any more. You know, you can prevent that. And these drugs that you're taking, like this this pill, oral contraception, hey, they've all got side effects, and they've all got some real nasty side effects that you know, you can read about. I'm not going to sit here and preach a sermon about them. You know, if you're satisfied with the risk that goes with it, get after it. But if you want to avoid that risk, and then you want to avoid pregnancy and so on, there's ways to do that. Now, he starts off the story here. This is on page 555. He says, just a wonderful little human being, though small, that is what he is. By 18 days, this little heart is already beating. From the time that the conception occurs, that's the mating of the sperm with the egg, 18 days later, it's got a little beating heart. Before 6 weeks, at 40 days, his electrical brain waves have already been recorded. H. Hamilton, life or death by EEG. Prior to 6 weeks, his yolk sac was making his own blood cells. But by the 6th week, his liver begins doing this important work. Later on, will be done within his bones, and he has been moving for quite some time. All 20 milk teeth buds are present. At 6.5 weeks, he is really priceless. And he is already sensitive to things around him. In the 6th to 7th weeks, in the area of the lips is gently stroked. The child responds by bending the upper body to one side and making a quick backward motion with his arms. This is called a total pattern response because it involves most of the body rather than just a localized part. Now, at 7 weeks, ultrasound scanners can pick up the heart action of the infant. Each one of these, by the way, is cited here with a medical journal. I'm not reading off the medical journals here for you. The Medical World News, February 1978, the ultrasonic stethoscopes, now common in obstetricians' offices, allow the mother to hear her baby's heartbeat as well as early as 8 weeks, and he's really doing pretty well. Now, your child is now just 2 months old, 8 weeks, and the brain is completely present. At 8 weeks, if we tickle the baby's nose, he'll flex his head backward away from the stimulus. By 8 weeks, an unborn will grasp something placed in his small hand and hold on to it. Now, that's pretty nice. His stomach is now secreting gastric juice, and experts say that all of his body systems are present and operating. The nose is short and snub. The eyes peer out from above it, but later at the beginning of the third month, 12th week, the eyelids will grow together, closing his eyes. They will open again during the seventh month. Weeks ago, the bones began to form and mature. That maturing will continue on for years. The top of the skull bones do not close until a year and a half after birth, and yet the body skeleton will not itself be fully developed until the age of 25. Now, that's why people before that age can so wonderfully heal when they injure their bones. So let's look at his little ears. The ear consists of three different parts and originates in three different regions. In the fourth week, a bubble is turned inward from the skin on both sides of the rear part of the brain, and this will later become the inner ear with its delicate auditory and balance organs. Then in the fifth ear, the outer ear with the auditory canal and the outer side of the eardrum is developed at the upper end of the first of three grooves. The rest will close. The inner ear will be formed from tissue that comes from down in the pharynx. Only the God of heaven knows how to make little babies. That's quite a little story. I got to tell a little story here that goes along with that. Years ago, my first wife had a had an abortion, a natural abortion. It's a stillbirth, as sometimes called. Anyway, it was about the third or fourth month, something like that. Baby's fully developed, and we decided to donate. We were asked by the hospital if we would donate the baby, the what do they call that? I'll think of it in a second. To medical science. So we did. I'm not sure I'd do that again today, but at that time, you know, we were young and dumb, and so we went ahead and did it. And as a result of that, we were invited into the laboratory. And so we did, and we went in there. And they had about 50 jars of formaldehyde. Now, I'm going to say 50. I'm not sure there was 50. Might have been 38 or 42 or 49. I don't know exactly. But they were arranged on five or six shelves, probably about six or eight of these jars. And each one of these jars contained the fetus. That's the word I was looking for. The fetus at 1 week intervals. So they had a fetus there at 1 week, 2 weeks, 5 weeks, 10 weeks, 15 weeks, and then at the total 39 weeks. Now, these babies had all died in childbirth and been donated to scientific study at the University of California there at Berkeley, which is what we had done. And you could see the development as the baby is becoming, the fetus is growing and progressing. So they've been watching this, you know, for a lot of years. I mean, this has been going on for a long time. And they study this. And, you know, it's all part of medical science and so on. Well, now here's another little factoid that comes into play. People haven't always had the same level of technical or technological advantage or expertise, and so over the years they experimented. That's where these herbal remedies that we were talking about in the last program came from. Somebody would have something wrong with them. They didn't know what was wrong with them, and so they would give them something, and then they would die. And so they could see, well, what we gave them didn't work. And then, you know, somebody would live. They'd give them something, and they would live. Now, this is where you give somebody who's got pneumonia, and then you give them garlic, and they survive more often than they die, then it tells you that, hey, this garlic's got something going for it. So they would write that down, you know, and then they'd pass that on to the next generation and so on. Same thing is true here with pregnancy, you know. I've often said, you know, probably the best person to go to when you're pregnant, all for you young women, would be your mother. And the reason I suggest Mama or Grandma or Aunt Bessie is because these are all females and they've all had babies. Your grandmother had a baby. You know, that was your mama or your daddy. And your mama, you know, she had a baby. That was you and probably three or four more. And I've often wondered why you young women want to run off to some man called a pediatrician who's never had a baby, who went to college and got a bunch of papers that says he's real smart. And he may be. I wouldn't deny it. But you just can't beat experience. Now, my old Aunt Bessie had four babies and my granny had seven. And, you know, my Aunt Edith, she had three. You know, as I go through, you know, some of these old ladies out here, you know, that have been through this a few times, you know, these old ladies aren't near as dumb as you think they are. You know, your mama, hey, girlie, your mama out there, she's been through this childbirth thing, and she knows what she's doing because she's already experienced it. So it would seem like to me that instead of listening to the good folks down here at the public school, I think if you'd listen to your mama and grandma and Aunt Bessie, I think they could do a hell of a lot more for you. Now there's a lot of these old ladies that came up, and they knew that birth defects were caused by nutritional deficiencies. They might not have been able to put a Latin name on a particular enzyme, but they just knew that when you took a lot of garlic in when you were pregnant, your chances of having a deformed baby were a lot less. They might not have known about the chemical substances contained in the herbs. They just knew that when you took these herbs, when you ate these particular foods, we didn't get cleft palate and club foot, Mongol babies, mongoloid babies. Oh, by the way, those mongoloid babies are caused by nutritional deficiency also. This lady that just ran for president, Sarah Palin, she had a baby recently, you know, within the last few years, and it was born as a mongoloid baby. They only last for about 20 to 30 years, and they die early. Genetic defect. As the baby, now she's had four or five other children, and they were all normal, but this one turned out, well, what happened here with Sarah Palin's baby, as it was going through this protoblast period, 56 days, it was lacking this vitamin. At that exact day, the day that that thing doubled in size, it was lacking that vitamin, that's why it came out mongoloid. Isn't that special? Now listen, my Aunt Bessie knew that, and so did my granny. They couldn't put a scientific name on it, but you don't need to. You don't need to. Just because somebody's gone to college and he's got some names to hang on the components of garlic or herba usa or some other herb doesn't make him all that smart in the final analysis. All Aunt Bessie knew that. And she was smart enough. Now, my Aunt Bessie had four babies, all normal. My granny had seven babies, all normal. You know, 100 years ago, we didn't have nearly as many birth defects as we're having today. We had a lot more infant mortality. No doubt about that. Infant mortality has always been a problem. Had we followed the 19 laws of the scripture that relate to health, we wouldn't have had those. We wouldn't have had all of those deaths, but most people don't know about those 19 health laws in the scripture. But there's a lot of people, the Chinese people, the Japanese people. You know, those people don't all go to the doctors. In fact, they use midwives. In fact, when you look in the Bible about chapter 1 of Exodus, when Moses, you know, was about to be born, there's a story in there about midwives. See, in the olden days, people thought that women knew more about childbirth than men. that's not true today, and I don't deny it. But there was a time when women believed that women knew more about having babies than men. They thought they were more experienced at it. Now, today, of course, we know that's not true, especially with modern universities and colleges and with cesarean sections. And who's performing all these cesarean sections? It's male doctors with boat payments. Yeah, men doctors with boat payments and airplane payments, they can tell right away that you need a cesarean. I'll tell you a little story here. My wife was having our fifth child. We had five. And as Robert was about to be born, you know, our plan was to have him born at home. And my wife's mother was a nurse, and she said, well, I'll come up there and deliver the baby at home if you want to have a home birth. And so my mother-in-law, she's pretty experienced. I mean, she'd had four children of her own. That in itself, I thought, made her pretty competent and qualified. Now, by this time, my wife had four babies, and I thought that made her pretty competent and qualified. And so we're going to have this home birth. Well, I got a call at the from the hospital to my office, and they said, hey, your wife's in the hospital having a baby. And I thought, well, I thought we had decided to have that baby at home. And about 3 weeks from now, she wasn't quite due yet. And so, anyway, I thought, well, I guess I should go down to the hospital and see how things are going. So when I walked up to the office, walked up to this nice lady, you know, at the office, said, my name is George Gordon, and my wife is in here, been brought in, I guess, for childbirth. Can you tell me where she's? Oh, yeah. She's up on the second floor. It's down at St. Luke's. She's up on the second floor, or third floor, forgot which. Third floor. And would you like to go up to visit her? And I said, yeah, I would. And so she said, well, take the elevator up the third floor, and here's the room. And so I got in the elevator and went up there. And when the elevator door opened on the third floor, there was this man standing in front of me, you know, with the stethoscope around his... See, these men, to identify themselves, you know, they have badges, signs, you know, there's stripes on their arms. And so in a hospital, to recognize a doctor, he's got a stethoscope around his neck, wearing a white smock. And if the guy is wearing a brown shirt with his name on it, he's the janitor pushing the barrel. So you can tell these guys one from another. And he had a bunch of papers in his hands. And right away, he addressed me. He said, Mr. Gordon? And right away, I knew. Wait a minute. You know, about 60 seconds or 90 seconds ago or 2 minutes ago, I was downstairs at the desk. And all of a sudden, this guy comes up and addresses me by name as I'm coming out of the elevator. And I thought, well, that's kind of peculiar. I'd never seen this guy before. He's not our family doctor. I'd never seen this, you know, nice young fellow. Wouldn't begrudge him that. But so anyway, he said, now your wife is having a problem with labor. She's 3 weeks early. Yeah, I could tell that. Because my mother-in-law wasn't there yet. Mother-in-law wasn't going to come out for a little while longer yet. And so, anyway, here she is in the hospital. And he said, now we're going to have to perform a cesarean. She can't have natural childbirth. I want to repeat that. He said, your wife has to have a cesarean because she can't have this baby by natural childbirth. Now, she's already had four. And she had two or three miscarriages. That's what they call that. We call them spontaneous abortion here in the cattle business. She aborted, you know. It's a natural process. When a fetus is malformed or it's screwed up in some way, you'll abort it. That's to prevent you from having one of these babies, you know, that's deformed. So anyway... I thought that was really strange because my wife had not had a problem getting them out. she had a problem keeping them in. That was the problem. See, spontaneous abortion is where they're born early, 4 months, 3 months, 5 months, you know, premature births. You know, that's the problem. I was really amazed. And I said, what are you talking about? And he said, well, you know, she's in labor and she's unable to have the baby. We're going to have to perform a cesarean. Now, I happen to know from my legal experience that cesareans at that time cost about $5,000. Natural childbirth was about $500. Now, it wasn't that I was arguing over the money. I mean, you know, if she needed a cesarean, I'd say go ahead. But I found it hard to believe that my first wife needed a cesarean. That wasn't her problem. We'd been through this, you know, 4 times before. So I said, well, why don't we go in and ask her? You know, I mean, if my wife said, I want a cesarean, I'd say, well, okay, sweetheart, if that's what you want. But, you know, we'd already talked about that a time or two, and we kind of decided that that's not the best plan in the world. And so he said, well, we can't because she's under sedation. I said, you mean my wife is unconscious in that room? See, we weren't in the room yet. We're still out in the hall. In fact, we're standing in front of the elevator. She's just down there about three doors down. And he said, yeah, she's under sedation, and we need you to sign here to give us the authority to go ahead and perform the cesarean. And had I signed that, they would have wheeled her right out and done the cesarean, and that would have been the end of it. And 99 people out of 100 would do just that. If that's what the doctor recommends, then by God, that's what we ought to do. Now, I'm a little different breed of cat. First of all, my first thought was, don't you think that we should ask the person that we are going to put under the knife whether or not they want to be put under the knife? That was my first thought. It was civil rights. You know, I'm a civil rights advocate, and my thinking is that before we do this, we need to ask the person, do you want to do this? And she couldn't answer because she was unconscious. They had, for some reason, shot her up with something and put her to sleep. Then they invited me in and said, here, sign here and give us permission and we'll do this cesarean, which is now going to cost me $5,000 instead of $500. Now, honest to God, the money hadn't entered my mind yet. It's going to shortly, but it hadn't yet. I said, let's ask her. Now, he says, well, she's unconscious. I said, good, we'll just wait until she wakes up. If she has the baby while she's unconscious, well, then we don't need a cesarean because it fell out. And if she can't have the baby and she needs the cesarean, when she wakes up, she's going to be in great pain, and then she's going to say, yeah, let's do the cesarean, or no, let's not, or, you know. But I was pretty adamant. I said, no, I think we're going to ask her. We're gonna find out what she wants to do here. Now, he said to me at that juncture, he said, now, you know, in an emergency like this, we don't need your permission. We can go ahead without it. And I said, I don't doubt that. And if you think this is an emergency and you want to go ahead and do a cesarean, get after it. But I want to let you know ahead of time that if there's anything that goes haywire, any complication, you can rest assured that litigation will surely follow. Now, when she went to the hospital, she signed herself in. And, of course, when you sign yourself in, you give your power of attorney to the hospital. Now, she didn't have a problem getting them out. She had a problem keeping them in. And sure enough, when she woke up, she had the baby naturally, natural childbirth. Then they said, well, now it's 3 weeks early. Well, that's true, it was. Now, I don't know if they gave her something that made her have the baby 3 weeks early, they stuck the baby in the hospital and under ultraviolet light and ran the bill up to $5,000 anyway. If you can't get it by cesarean, well, then we'll just do it by other means. But here's the moral to the story. Doctors have an agenda. 35% of childbirths here in the United States are done by cesarean. Let me tell you, ladies, that a long time before cesareans were invented, women were having babies. And it is true that there were some deaths in childbirth. I don't deny that. For which a cesarean would probably have saved the mother and the baby's life. Well, God bless cesarean sections. But they didn't represent 35% of the childbirths 100 years ago. Now, maybe 1 in 100 needed a cesarean. And maybe 1 in 100 needs a cesarean today. But it ain't 35%. It ain't 35 out of 100. Now, if you want one and you want to pay the money and you want to do it that way, you know, get after it. That's what medicine is there for. They've got a product to sell and they want to sell it. And if that's what you want to buy, then get after it. But I wanted to point out to you that when a cow is about to have a calf, and if she's got the means, she will walk around in the woods and she will eat certain herbs. And once in a while, it does happen, once in a while, a cow cannot have a calf normally or naturally. Now, in 26 years, I have about 10 or 15 a year that have calves, and I've been doing that now for 26 years. Let me just multiply that out. Let's go 10 a year times 26 years. It's 260 calves. The vet has been out here one time to cut a calf out of a cow. Out of 260 calves, we had one calf that the cow could not have. And for whatever reason. And we had to cut it out. That cow needed a cesarean. Now, we don't do cesareans on cows. We just cut the calf out and take it out dead. Now, in the same 26 years, I've only had two or three that had to be cleaned out. That is, the placenta didn't cut loose from the uterus, and then we have to call the vet, and he comes out and he cleans the cow out. And that's because there are natural herbs out there in the woods. These cows did not get to those natural herbs. That's why they had these problems. When a cow is about to have a calf, you know, about the week before she's about to have it, she'll go out there and she'll eat all of the raspberry leaves she can get. She'll eat grape leaves. You'll see her out there doing it. And when you see her eating those, you say, well, that cow is springing. She's about to have a calf. You can see that. And you can say, now, because I see what she's eating, these herbs, she's going to have that calf in the next week. And the reason I know that is because she does that so that she can have the calf easy and natural. And if you ladies would eat these herbs before your baby is born, you'll have a natural childbirth, and it'll be very easy, and it won't be very painful. Be a little pain. There's a little bit of pain there. But it won't be near as bad. Now, if you want to go with the drug route, that's fine. And the reason you ladies are complaining about your childbirth is because it's god-awful painful. And that's because you don't have the right herbs before the baby is born. And then you don't have the right herbs to keep the baby inside, and you don't have the right herbs as this baby is developing, and so it creates a spontaneous abortion. See, my first wife was nutritionally deficient. That's why she was having these abortions. Once she got her diet straightened out, she had 5 babies in a row, no problems at all. She didn't have a problem with the last one. It was born naturally. But she thought she was in trouble, and so she went to the hospital. And boy, once you get to the hospital, they will guarantee that there's going to be trouble. Anytime you pregnant ladies check into the hospital, rest assured, no natural childbirth is going to occur from that point on. You can bet on it. After all, that's what the medical business is there for. It's there to make a profit. It's there to make money. Natural childbirth is $500. Caesareans are $5,000. And when you have complications, that's worth thousands and thousands more. Well, tuck it away in your heart. Hey, listen, we're at the halfway point. Let me give you a reminder here that you are listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now it's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives. All of it can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to the website georgegordon.org, click onto the archives page, and download that free general law CD package right there off the Internet. The sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements, these recommendations that we give, they don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing will necessarily reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review, these people may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic. They may be partisans, and their viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour either. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then just go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about natural home remedies. Now, there used to be a thing here called natural home childbirth. That's very rare today. It's not unheard of, but it's just very rare. You typically need a midwife. And, of course, many states have outlawed midwives, like they do here in Missouri. And that's not normal or natural. That is to protect the medical monopoly. They don't want you to have babies at home. They want you to have babies in the hospital because that's where the money is. And they don't want you to use natural herbs. They want you to use drugs because that's where the money's at. And I'm not opposed to that. I mean, hell, that's a choice that you have to make. And once you've made the choice, you know, get after it. But some of us don't want to do that, you know, and like my first wife, she wanted to have natural childbirth at home, and she ended up in the hospital and almost had a cesarean. She was fortunate. She didn't. And she had natural childbirth, which is what we wanted to start with. And she had the other four in the hospital, so having the fifth one in the hospital wasn't the end of the world, you know. I wouldn't go to the hospital if I didn't need to. There's disease in there. Sometimes they get babies mixed up, you know, and then years later you find out that you were raising, you know, the neighbor's kid, and they've got your kid, and there's been a few cases like that. Not often, you know, it isn't something that's endemic, but it happens once in a while. And there's 19 health laws here in the scripture. Now, God tells you, you ladies out there, if you want to have healthy, natural, normal childbirth and babies, and you want to do it painlessly, there's a way to do that. And it's these 19 health laws in the scripture, and if you'll stick with those 19, it's guaranteed. It's kind of like living to be 70. If you want to live to be 70, there's 19 health laws in the scripture. Practice those 19 health laws and guarantee. God himself guarantees it. And if you die before, then bring a wrongful death action against him. Make him pay. He says he will. You know, he said, hey, I'll keep my end of the deal up to 1,000 generations. The problems, boys and girls, aren't with our Creator. The problems are with us. We're the guys that aren't upholding our end of the deal. We're the guys that aren't performing our end of the contract. And then we have premarital pregnancies, and then we have spontaneous abortions, and we have malformed and deformed babies and mongoloids and cleft palates and one thing and another. And hey, you know, you did it to yourself. Now, maybe you did it to yourself in ignorance and you didn't know, but then, you know, maybe it's time to wake up and smell the coffee here and let's see if we can learn something. Which is why I brought to your attention this book. You can prevent it up front. Now, when it comes to birth defects, now these are things that you need to be thinking about. If your baby is born mongoloid, or your baby is born with a cleft palate, or a club foot, those are nutritional deficiencies. You could have eliminated that. There wasn't any need for that. That isn't an accident. But it's ignorance, so I'll grant you that. And children 14 years old ought not to be having babies. That's why fornication is a bad practice. And practicing sex, safe sex, that isn't going to handle it, boys and girls. You know, you can be practicing safe sex and have condoms. Condoms break and condoms don't work. And sometimes you get excited and condoms you don't even have, and things happen. Now, there's morality. God didn't leave you without morality. Now, he said, now, there's a way to do this, and here's the way I want you to do it. And if you'll follow these laws, then you won't have any accidents. There won't be any mistakes. And then you won't have any deformed babies. And you ladies out there, if you breastfeed your baby and you don't poison him with vaccination, then you'll have... You'll have natural immunity. Your baby will have natural immunity, and you'll have no crib death and no autism. So if you want to eliminate disease and you want to eliminate autism and crib death and spontaneous abortion, deformities, those 19 health laws. I just want to emphasize those 19. This isn't the program. This isn't the day and time to do it. And I've covered those before, so if you'll go to our archives, And just start going down through our archives there, you'll find health laws. We have a lot of health programs. I do about 10 or 11 subjects here, and every once in a while we do health. That's what we're doing this week is health. And then we'll do politics, and then we'll do economics, and then we'll do science and something else. Okay, this is health. And if you'll practice these health laws, then you'll get the benefits that come from it. And if you violate them, hey, listen, when your baby is born mongoloid, that's a violation of a health law. Sarah Palin, nice lady. She broke a law, and she had a baby born mongoloid. And I'm sorry to hear that, and I'm sorry for the baby, and I'm sorry for Mrs. The problem is she caused it herself. But you're saying, but she didn't know. Okay, so she was ignorant. You know, I'm an old-timey pilot. And when an airplane crashes, you know, then they want to find out. The FAA goes and they want to find out what happened there. And most of the time they find out it's pilot error. Pilot error. I don't remember exactly the statistics, but the chances of your airplane malfunctioning, It's not the airplane that malfunctions, it's the nut behind the wheel that's malfunctioning. Now, I wrecked an airplane one time, and I came close to wrecking a couple of more. and it was always pilot error. It was the nut behind the wheel. It wasn't the airplane. Now, those of us that are pilots, we don't ever like to admit that it's me. I made a mistake. I screwed up. See, we don't do that. It was the airplane. It was the weather. It was 55 things, but it wasn't me. Now, come on, let's wake up and smell the coffee here. When you crash an airplane, the examiner, when he comes out, he starts off from the proposition that it's probably pilot error. Probably. When an airplane disintegrates in the air, like that TWA-800 did, you know, that's not pilot error. You know, something happened up there to the airplane. The pilot did not disintegrate the airplane. He's up there flying around, and the airplane just blew up around him, and, you know, well, okay, now we got to find out, well, what caused this explosion? And they do a pretty good job of that, you know, except for the cover-ups. I mean, you know, sometimes they need to cover it up for political reasons or something like that. But as a general rule, when an airplane crashes, they're out there trying to figure out what caused that. And the same thing is true when we do an autopsy. You know, we take a look at the body to find out, why did this body stop functioning? Why did it die? And almost always we can come up with a cause. Cause and effect. And that's what we have here, is that when you break a law, there will be an effect. Every time. No two ways about it. No such thing as a broken law without a penalty. And there's a cause and effect relationship here. So this is where wisdom, understanding, and knowledge comes in. If you want to avoid these side effects, you want to avoid these cause and effect bad results, then you need to take action up front. So you ladies need to take action before the birth defect. I mean, we can fix the cleft palate, but wouldn't it be easier to take the zinc so that you didn't have the cleft palate? Wouldn't it be easier to avoid, to prevent the mongoloid? I mean, you know, you got to make up your own mind and make up your own decisions here, but I just want to throw that out there for your consideration. Now, I got a few more minutes left, and there's one more thing in here I wanted to talk to you about. It's called hydrotherapy. It's on page 488. Let's see if I can find that. Hydrotherapy, page 488. Here it is. Big section in here. Hydrotherapy deals with water, like hot paraffin packs, hot paraffin dressing, sinus pack. I'm just going to give you a few more names here. Hot gauze compress, alternative hot and cold to the spine, simultaneous hot and cold to the head. You see, when you apply ice, let me give you an illustration here. Burn yourself real bad. I was an old-timey welder, and while I was welding, sometimes I would reach down and I would grab a piece of red-hot iron. Now, when it's a bright, sunshiny day, you can't always see that this iron is red-hot. And you reach down and you pick this thing up, and there's a little space of time, about 2 seconds, before the pain in your hand reaches your brain and says, let go. And when you let go, sometimes, I mean, if this thing is really hot, it won't let go. It sticks to you. This hot iron sticks to you. You got to shake it off. I burned my hand like that one time. Oh, my God. God, ain't nothing like a burn, is there? I mean, I can think of a lot of ways to get hurt, and getting burned ain't one of my favorites. So here I am, I'm burned real bad. But years ago, I had learned that if you will put that in ice, if you'll put that in ice water, it takes all the pain away. So the next time you get burned, let me show you how to handle it. Take ice, put it in water. And then stick your hand in the ice water, and the pain will go away. 100%. As long as that sucker is in the ice water. Now, you take it out of the ice water, and boy, you're going to howl. That's hydrotherapy. But this hydrotherapy has a lot of applications. And it has a lot of applications that deal with detoxification. there's a process here. I haven't done it, and I don't want to do it. this does not appeal to me at all. But they take you out here and they put you on the table, and they take ice. No, first of all, they heat you up. They put hot towels all over your body. They boil these towels. I mean, they're just hotter than the blue blazes of hell. And they come out here, and then you got to cool them off to a level that you can stand. And I'm telling you, they put these towels on me. I've been through the hot. The hot isn't so bad, but they put them on you. Sometimes it'll burn a little bit, and you got to cool it off. But they raise your core body temperature this way. And by raising your body's core temperature, your blood vessels thin out, open up, and your blood flows a lot faster. Okay, now here comes the kicker. Now they've got ice, and they're ready with this ice pack. And they've got this sheet that's cold, it's wet, cold. And then they wrap you. You're hotter than the blue blazes of hell. Now they wrap you in this cold sheet. All right. Boy, don't that sound like fun. Well, when you've got cancer or you have a disease, a life-threatening disease, this hydrotherapy over here is what they do to detoxify you. Your body cells will now give up those toxins and push them out into your bloodstream, this hot and cold. It's called hydrotherapy. And if you're trying to get rid of toxins, now you take a kid that's autistic, autism, we think, you know, most of us guys that are out here thinking about this, we think that it's caused by the mercury in the vaccines. This mercury is a heavy metal, it's a toxin, and it's in this child's body, and it's a metal, and remember, your body is an electrical battery, and to get signals from your brain down to your finger, those are electrical connectors, they're called neuroconnectors. Just move your first finger or your thumb here. See, I'm moving my fingers? All right, now, my brain is telling me I want to move that finger. Now, if my finger is flopping around, or if I'm rocking back and forth, or I've got the palsy and my hand is shaking, these neuroconnectors are firing. And they're causing these involuntary motions in your body, kind of like your heartbeat is an involuntary muscle. It's an involuntary process. Yeah, you don't have to think about your heartbeat. It's you're breathing. It's done automatically. All right, now, I've got my hand sitting out here, and it's perfectly still. I mean, I can hold my hand still. But if it was flopping around, I'd say, wait a minute, my neuroconnectors, what's causing that? Okay, you've got a metal, and you short-circuit, and what happens? So you get fire when you do that with your ceiling fixture. You get sparks up there. Well, in your body, you've got these electrical connectors, and this mercury is a metal, and it short-circuits these neural connectors, and your kid is rocking back and forth. So what we need to do is we need to detoxify this person. To detoxify them, a lot of the times they use this process. Now, I haven't become so toxic that I needed that yet, and I'm not going to volunteer to do it. Now, Scott was here, and he said he'd done it. I asked him if he'd like to do that again. He said, no, he's got it. Feels awful. But he said it worked, and he had a toxic problem, and he needed to get these toxins out of his body, and so that's what he did to do them. There's a whole section in here on this hydrotherapy that'll explain to you how to do it and why it works that way and why that process works. Now, there's other ways to detoxify it. Remember I mentioned to you, you could go into your doctor and he'll use, there's a process. What do you call them, guys? Chelation. You got oral chelation and you got intravenous chelation. I've done them both. They both work. Now, if you want to take the plaque out of your arteries, you can do it with raw cow's cream. See, you can do these things naturally. That's what I'm pointing out here. These hydrotherapies are just natural things. You can do this at home. Now, if you want to take the plaque out of your arteries, there's a natural way to do that. I drink cow's cream. I do it right now. I'm an old man, and people will, when they see me pouring cream onto my cereal, they say, "Oh my God, Mr. Gordon, don't you know that's cholesterol and it's going to plug you up and kill you?" It's like the guy I started the series with, in program one. I said, I got a letter from a guy, and he said, "You're going to hell because you've got a living mate. You got a wife that's living. You divorced her, and she's still alive. You're going to go to hell." And I said, "Well, I'm sure he believes that. He's wrong. He made a mistake. He doesn't understand the other statutes that go with that, and I understand that, and I'm not mad at you, sir. Thank you very much for giving me the warning." All right, that's all I'm doing here. There's other ways. There's natural ways for you to chelate. There's natural ways to get these toxins out of your body, and I wanted to bring that to your attention in this section on hydrotherapy over here, that we've been doing this for thousands of years. Now, personally, rather than do this hot, cold sheet program, I think I would prefer the intravenous chelation. I don't know, maybe God's going to get mad at me for doing this intravenous chelation rather than, the 19 health laws, but I got to tell you that it's painless, other than sticking the needle in you, which, gags a maggot, but once they stick this needle into you, you go through about 6, 8, 10 of these weekly sessions over here, and it'll just melt the plaque in your arteries out. So the next time the doctor says to you, "Well, you got to have bypass surgery," well, of course he's going to tell you bypass surgery. That's where the money's at. $100,000. But for $1,000 or $2,000, you can do the same thing and keep all of your arteries and veins in their proper location in your body and save about $95,000 or $98,000 in the process and have it done by the same medical doctor. He'd probably tell you, "No, I'm not going to do that." Go look them up in the Yellow Pages. All the major cities, Kansas City, St. Louis, they'll have a chelation clinic there somewhere. Now, if you don't want to do that, you can drink raw cow's cream. Or, if you've got mercury toxins in your body or cadmium or something like that, you can do this hot sheet, cold sheet thing, and they've got diagrams in here to show you, here's the table that you sit on, here's the way you do that, here's the way you put your feet into this hot tub and get your veins opened up and get your blood to flowing. There's a natural way to do this, and we've been doing it for about 4,000 years. Doesn't cost you very much. Works like a shot. Most of it's authorized by God himself and his 19 health laws and tells you, hey, this is the way to do that. But here's the book again. Remember, it's Home Remedies. You can get a copy from heirloomseeds.com. I'm almost out of time here. That's also known as Baker Creek Seeds in Mansfield, Missouri. Or you can go directly to the publisher over here, and they're called Harvest Time Books. Harvest Time Books. And they're located in Tennessee. They're at Pilgrim's Books, Beersheba Springs, Tennessee, 37305. All right, we're about the end of the program over here. I'm about running out of time, so I got to give you a final reminder that you have been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then just go to our website, georgegordon.org. Tell you everything that we can think of to tell you. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. And the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.